it's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 1st of February 2014. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. I'm Chris Walker, and on Saturday the 1st of February, I talked to the opinionated Islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone. Then I spoke with Daughter Ray from the Waiheke Resources Trust and Susan Barker from the Blackpool Residents Association about the Kai Conscious Project. Then I talked to Charlie Walsh, who's organising the tractor race at the Onitangi Beach Races on March the 2nd. You're listening to Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. And as it's the first Saturday of the month, in fact the first of the month, I'm joined in the studio by your opinionated Islanders Alan Knight.
Good morning.
And Alex Stone.
How are you?
You all need well? To do something with your microphone there. Adjust it up.
Shall we switch it on?
No, it's on.
How's that?
Hold on, here we go.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Good Lord, we got that.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
We're in business.
Yeah, we are. So, first time in this year, actually.
It is, yes. Because, of course, you can't expect people to be lucid in on the first Saturday
first
of January. It's
yeah.
just, that wouldn't work.
No.
I was very impressed to read about the year of the horse, because there's a big feature in the Herald yesterday. So I've been saying 2014 is going to be a good year. And it was all confirmed yesterday in the Herald, where it said, the year of the horse for people aged 56, me, I'm going to have a very good year for love, business success, and one other thing, but only in the second half of the year. So I can look forward to that.
Ah, doesn't that only work if you're Chinese?
No, I'm going to buy it.
Okay. Yeah. Nasty things, horses.
Well, they're
horrible, unpredictable, brutish things.
Not the brightest, anyway. Yeah.
No. They're like a sort of a hideous, overpowered motorcycle with a kind of nasty, brutish intelligence tucked away behind the huge kind of nasty lawnmower attachment on the front. I learned to ride as a child, and I really hated it.
Me too. But give them their due. Horses, if you look at them in one point of view, they have an extraordinary physical genius. They evolved totally for flight. And you just have to see a picture of a lion chasing a zebra. You can see where this evolution comes from, and which explains everything about a horse's character. It doesn't matter how big and strong they are shit scared of everything, and they just want to run away.
Particularly when roaming around late at night over
golf courses
and stuff. Yes.
How did we get onto that?
Oh, it was bound to happen. You can't mention horses without golf clubs coming.
We didn't even rehearse that one.
No.
Anyway, what about Waiheke issues?
Well, yeah, so we're into the consultation around the... Well, I can never figure this out. So you've got the local board plan, and which is kind of setting out for the three years what they want to work on.
But it takes a year to get it done. So it takes a year to write the plan, and you've only got 2 years left to implement it.
So we're into the consultation period. I think officially it starts... as it goes through to the 16th of February or something around that time, but... Yeah. They're out and about.
Started,
they're doing it. Yeah.
Well, I was very impressed to note this morning. I went down to the Austin Market quite early, and there's a big sign out. Local board are inside. Come in, have a coffee and a chat. And only Paul Walden had turned up at that point. As I say, it was quite early, but the rest of them were on their way in. And obviously, knowing that I was coming in here this morning, I sat down, had a brief chat to Paul, and said, what's your take on all this thing about the reallocation of funding away from the sports club? And his reply was exceptionally good, completely straightforward and great. I don't intend to get into it here in case I get any of it wrong.
Yeah, we'll get him in next week.
You'd be better off getting it from him.
We will.
But certainly as a voter going in there and asking him a question, his answer was, as ever, entirely lucid and impressive.
Yeah, no, that's good. I met the three members of the board on Wednesday night, and I was very impressed with their kind of articulation of an overarching environmental vision for the island, including all the social aspects of it. They have got some really big goals and sort of wonderfully lofty and noble goals that this community could aspire to. I think they're doing a good job. So
they are, yeah. I'm certainly very impressed with how they're going so far. But what is interesting to note, though, is that as the board are getting on with things, are we beginning to see, well, we are beginning to see, the emergence of a kind of Waiheke equivalent of America's Tea Party.
That's a good way of putting it. Waiheke Tea Party.
Yeah, it's very strange. Paul was mentioning this morning, he said that every time they have a meeting, you have this group of very angry, toxically angry people always come to the meetings, and they're sitting there, arms folded, scowling.
Yeah, and they're coming from the far right end of the spectrum.
You know, it's funny that, you know, obviously that sort of serious right wing approach never got represented on Waiheke before. Certainly not while I've been here. Local board or the community board or whatever has always been very sort of community based and quite liberal. But it's funny, you give these folks 3 years' worth of actually having a board that are prepared to listen to the privileged and the rather self-righteous. And all of a sudden, obviously it was a fluke that ever happened, but now it's been taken away from them. These people are not happy. And there is this very sort of toxic... we were discussing this before we went on air... some of the opposition to the reallocation of funds up at the sports club and so forth. And, these folks are very like the Tea Party. are we developing our own Barkmans and Palins here on Waiheke?
Well, I think we've got a couple of those already. Yeah.
Who do this kind of gleeful make stuff up as you go along, attribute it to your political foes, And make out like it's true.
And also based on a kind of stunning naivety. You know, some of the issues, say, with the environment are so one-line-ish when, you know, the complex issues that need adult and reasoned debate. And they give them... There is a sort of one-line angle to these things. And
yes. Well, I mean, the accusation of the current board being naive... and misguided.
Yeah.
It's a bit rich coming from the supporters of a previous board who were naive and misguided enough to believe that 30% support would guarantee them a re-election.
Yeah, it's strange to call that. I mean, the guys that have just rolled you comprehensively in an election are the naive and misguided.
Yeah. I think there's this idea that the our local Tea Party have that the previous board was somehow stunningly professional and really onto it. Well, I'm sorry, looking back on it, I don't see that. Given that one of the most important things that a board can do, or any politician can do, is put some sort of effort into getting re-elected.
On side with your constituents.
Yes, it's kind of important for the job. It really is. It's this absolute basic politics.
We could write a political book here. Politics 101. Step one, stay friends with your constituents for the purpose of becoming re-elected.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's certainly true of most democratic politics. That the idea is all you've ever got to do is make sure that 51% of the population don't actively hate you, don't involve your country in a war, and don't collapse the economy. Yeah. That's kind of basic. That's your basic job as a politician.
Yeah.
But on a local level... as I say, it is a bit rich having these accusations of naivety levelled at the current board, who seem to be doing incredibly well, by a board that simply blew themselves out of the race very, very early on when it came to getting re-elected.
So the big-ticket item that people are kind of commenting on at the moment in the draft plan is this, the reallocation of funds to look at a swimming pool.
Yeah.
Have either of you looked at further into the plan?
I haven't looked at the plan. I'm planning to this week, but the development of the pool is interesting on a lot of levels. The latest I've heard is it's now becoming a covered pool.
Mm-hmm.
In the vision, which is a hell of a lot more expensive, obviously, than a pool that's not inside a building.
But what's the point of having a pool that you can only use half the year?
Yeah, that's the point. But what could be quite an innovative way of making it happen is the partnership with the schools, because the schools have to be rebuilt. Te Huruhi and Waiheke High have to be rebuilt as part of the Ministry of Education's upgrading of all their buildings from earthquakes and stuff. And it's old news that the buildings at the high school were woefully inadequate anyway, because they were old before they even got shifted here, the prefabs. So the rebuild of the school gives the board and the community an extraordinary opportunity to look at the pool being part of that and somehow being part funded by the Ministry for Education in the same way that the gym was, you know?
Mm.
So there are lots of interesting things that can happen out of the pool. It does seem a big scary project for the moment, but, you know, there's a seems to be a valid and growing part of it's a valid campaign and a growing part of the popular of the community that says we need it. So let's give it a go.
Personally, I really couldn't care less about a swimming pool. If they build one, I probably won't end up using it. So it's not something that really interests me. But I can see that it's something that a lot of people want, and the campaigning and the fundraising for it has been going on for a great many years now.
Yeah, no,
and I mean there really were some striking local initiatives, say 8, 9, 10 years ago, and a fair bit of money is raised and is still sitting in trust.
You mean for the pool?
For the pool.
Yeah, yeah. I think this debate about reallocation of funds is a bit, like you say, a storm in the Tea Party cup, because if they're worried about funds being removed from the sports park, the sports park is actually too big for Waiheke at the moment.
Well, the
facilities there are actually too good for the size of this community. There's a world-class rugby soccer field, a couple of them actually. There's this enormous clubhouse that is seldom used. They're very good tennis courts. But actually, that whole complex is fine for the next 10 years. So if you reallocate funds from that, maybe just have the bare minimum
although
for maintenance.
Although, if you talk to the sports clubs, I mean, particularly the football club, they would, you know, their position is that actually the facilities for them are pretty inadequate.
Oh, boo-hoo.
No, I wouldn't buy that. I was involved.
I was involved
coaching soccer on this island for 13 years, and I know those facilities are more than adequate for the level of soccer that goes on in this island. Sorry.
Well, no, that's interesting.
I don't buy
you're coming as from the you know, you're actually involved in this sort of stuff. I come from is rubbish.
Yeah, no,
point
no.
Of view. And having watched the millions of dollars that got spent putting that sports park together, to listen now to disgruntled sports park users going, well, you know, we were going to have upgrades. How much more do you people want?
No,
this incredible sense of entitlement that these knuckle dragging types have over their muddy sports fields, and this fantastic sense of self-righteousness.
Well, the funny
that sports
thing is
fans
the Waiheke sports field is probably the best in Auckland for a community. It was very well laid with 2 or 3 feet of sand over a clay over the base and the proper curve and stuff. And there have been many instances in the past 10 years when all the junior soccer in town is cancelled because all the fields are puggy, clay, and the one on Waiheke is fine and playable, but they cancel across the whole region. So the Waiheke field is pretty damn good.
Yes. Yeah. So I certainly think there would be a perception, which in fact for me was dispelled by Paul Walden this morning, because he actually explained a bit of what really is going on there. But my perception up until I went and talked to him about it was exactly that. Why do we constantly have to listen to people who spend one day a week rolling around in mud chasing a ball around a field? What is this fantastic sense of entitlement that these folks have?
Well, you could say it's a cornerstone of our society and culture, you know.
I say that's just horrible. Suppose, because, you know, this
maybe
is
we should be a more cultured society.
Well, this
but
is
like the flag debate. We want to put the All Black symbol on the flag. And rugby is going to decline in popularity in this country. There's no doubt about that. It has to.
So I would hope so, because the thing that strikes me, particularly with rugby, is that suppose there was one of these ridiculous teenage crazes for some kind of dangerous physical action that suddenly emerged, you know, like planking did last year.
Yeah.
Suppose some teenagers came up with something, let's be frivolous and call it, say, dwile flonking.
Yeah.
And it was a huge thing on social media and all these kids started doing it. But the side effect of this, of course, is compacted vertebrae, torn ligaments, skull fractures, all kinds of nasty injuries that are basically going to leave you dependent on ACC for the rest of your life. There would be a huge outcry. People would say, this has to stop. There'd be anguished newspaper editorials and, you know, 10 signs that your child is dwile flonking and so forth.
You only have to look at the ACC statistics.
And
the three codes of rugby are way off the top of the list.
You know, every weekend, more and more young people are hauled off in ambulances to a lifetime of dependency on ACC as their shattered kneecaps get worse and worse as they go on through life. And yet, we all go, yeah, rugby, fantastic. Well, I'm sorry, I really hate that.
Well, the demographic change of this country and the, hopefully, the continued civilising of this country means rugby will decline. It
just has to. And I'm a great believer in, if you want to put a sports team together and do your little knuckle-dragger thing on a Saturday afternoon, you bloody pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, a good drag. But the thing, we maybe we're getting off subject here because...
Just slightly.
No, I don't think we are because, I mean, we're talking about the idea that somehow... just because you're into rugby or soccer, you're entitled to all this incredible amount of money. And I, you know, as far as these disgruntled folks are going, oh, our money's being allocated. Well, tough.
But they're
boo-hoo.
They're dual issues at the sports park. I mean, as I say, on the one side, I think the field sports, rugby and soccer and cricket and tennis, are well catered for on that side of the creek. The big. Drama in the sports park zone is the golf club, the expansion of the golf club. That's the real drama.
And the golf club, of course, their sense of entitlement is genuinely hilarious.
But the whole golf club issue and the lease issue and all the rest of it is incredibly murky, isn't it? I mean, how would you ever figure out what's actually the situation around, you know, the leases and reserves and all the rest of it.
There has to be a paper trail. There has to be someone who has to have signed a lease.
Is it time just to draw a line in the sand and say, you know what? Which is kind of more or less what the last local board did.
Yeah.
They said, yes, but let's just go from here as a community. Yeah. What do we want?
Yeah.
And move it forward.
No, that's
fine. Is it time for, you know, for Paul Walden to let this go?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. The boating club's actually got the same situation. They don't have their lease, you know, where they pull the boats out. Their lease is not properly confirmed there. So they're also there on some kind of sufferance. And that would be a good thing to be cleared up as well.
But all I can say is having worked for a while as the theatre manager at Artworks Theatre, I listened to all these people whinging about their boat ramps and stuff. It's like, we got 10 grand a year to keep the theatre open.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a bunch of people who are interested in theatre. And, you know, we pretty much had to pay for it ourselves. So, you know, all this whinging about things you think you're entitled to.
The gallery gets 10 grand a year and they have to pay back 5 in rent.
Yes.
I think the theatre.
And I suppose the other factor that needs to be looked at, isn't it, with this plan, is, I mean, it's up for consultation. It's a draft.
Yeah.
You know, if we look back last time, in the development of the local board plan, there was a proposal for a very expensive, significant sculpture in Ellison Park.
Oh,
people
no.
looked at that and went, no.
Yeah.
You know, people can look at this plan money. And there'll be things that they don't agree with in it and things that they do. And
Well, I think the local board over the years has usually put aside about 15 grand to pay for one of the sculptures from Sculpture on the Golf.
Well, they should stop that.
Well, I think
I'm absolutely opposed to that.
I think that's the
Sculpture
reason.
On the Golf is the most fatuous and ridiculous event. It's just a complete pose fest. And the idea that public money should be spent on buying these ridiculous things and then leaving them to go rotten and fall over in Ellison Park.
Yeah, no,
absolutely
preposterous. You're losing the plot there because every great city in the world has beautiful, enduring public art. And often it's what defines a great city. If you go to Copenhagen or Brussels or, you know, Brussels is defined by the Mannequin P and Copenhagen is defined by the mermaid on the rock.
How many of those city-defining pieces of art were paid for by public subscription, not public money?
It seems to me, probably, yeah.
Yes, it seems to me that for art to actually mean anything, art has got to come from not only the heart, but from the wallet. If you want beautiful works of art, damn well go and pay for them. But expecting some committee of bureaucrats, pen pushers, and time-serving board members and things to decide on
My point was that if you go back to the size of the whole of the local board budget, the money that they have some kind of control over, to take 15 grand out of that, which would be a very small percentage, you know, for their contribution to public art, it's a small amount. You
know,
when you're talking about sports club, that was 740,000. So there's a big difference. The sports club, the money they want to reallocate from sports club is about 740,000.
Well, is it? We are taking that figure off.
No, that is part of that. That is a legit figure. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of maintenance and a lot of development there. Yeah, So it's interesting stuff. But going back to the golf club, the nub there is the intent of the golf club members to expand to 18 holes.
Yes.
And that's an interesting one in itself, because golf, you know, when you're talking about visitors coming to play golf clubs, they want to go away with a little anecdote, just like visitors coming to our wineries. They want to go and open their bottle of wine in Colorado or whatever and tell a story about this cutesy little winery they found on this funky little island. So the bigger, the unique selling proposition of the Waiheke Golf Club is that it's 13 holes. It's not quite 9 and it's not quite 18. It's kind of some weird mixture in the middle.
Yeah.
Which is like funny. So it's got this unique proposition that it's a little country course that's kind of funky, and that's its marketing potential. If it becomes a swish 18-hole course, it won't be anything different anymore. So maybe the golf club members should think about the unique proposition this wonderful little country course has.
The trouble with...
Does it need to go to 18 holes? That's my question.
As far as they're concerned, but it's, you know, I've talked to a couple of golf club members over the last sort of few months, and... it seems that every golf club member you talk to has something wrong with their head. Namely, it's shoved up their own bottom. The sense of self-regard that the golf club have, considering they're just a bunch of sad gits poking a ball around a field with a stick, they seem to think that they're some kind of elite who are entitled to pretty much whatever they want. And also that... their entitlement is backed up by genuine community feeling. Well, I've yet to meet anyone who isn't a golf club member who gives a damn about the golf club.
Yeah. The golf club membership stands at about 200 at the moment.
Right. And so that
was 400 2 years ago, and it collapsed as a result, I think, of a lag effect of the GFC. A lot of the members were batch owners, and they probably stopped paying their membership fees because it was a kind of extra luxury. And the casual fees for doing a normal round are quite modest, which is in line with your funky little country golf course.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've mentioned this before, but it seems to me that whenever any users of that entire valley start to get stroppy or start demanding stuff that, you know, maybe is above and beyond what they're entitled to. Yeah. Let us not forget that one of the things that that area was zoned for, and it's absolutely there in black and white on the original plan, is a rifle range.
Gosh. Is it written down?
Yes. It's amazing. That was one of the things that was said. Yes, you know, you can have a rifle range in this,
good
this spot.
Good luck for proposing that one.
Well, I rather think I'm going to.
that's buying a challenge. But, you know, when you...
Well, it's just that, you know, if there is this immense entitlement that everyone seems to have over any of that land down there, well, why are those of us who enjoy competitive rifle shooting being excluded from our rights to have access to that land? And have a rifle range.
While you were talking, I was just thinking of things that happen unexpectedly, because years ago when they wrote down rifle range, they didn't even... mountain biking hadn't become fashionable then. But now mountain biking is growing quite quickly. And when I go to the sports park, when there's no other organized sport there, the thing you see most are blokes on mountain bikes.
Yeah. Quite annoying blokes on mountain bikes.
The frisbee golf never really took off, did it?
Well, nah. that's pretty weird. Have you ever played it?
No.
It's a sort of once experience. You know, it's like putt-putt or something. You do it once and you think, okay, done that.
That's how I felt with golf. I've played one round of golf in my life on the island of Otatahi. The course was covered in coconuts and lizards, and it was one of the dullest things I think I've ever done.
Yeah.
Although lawn bowls is still the dullest
thing. I tell you what is up there with dull is it's also once in your life experience. We went to do curling in a little place in Otago where they go.
Naseby,
yeah. So you get this rock and you throw it on the ice. And the one thing that's nice about it is the sound the rock makes is it makes a sort of rumbling sound as it goes over the ice. But beyond that, it is pleasantly boring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and Canadians your feet get love cold.
It. So I can't imagine there being a proposal for a curling rink on the sports park, but good luck with the shooting range.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, The point to make, of course, is that those of us who actually do enjoy competitive shooting, and I'm not so much of a rifle range guy myself, I prefer clay pigeon shooting. Yeah. That's something I am actively involved in. But really, those of us who enjoy those kind of sports we know that there is no way we'll ever get public funding for them, so we sort them out ourselves.
Isn't
we
there
find private land and...
Don't one of the vineyards do clay pigeon shooting?
Ah, no, that's Wild and Waiheke, but that's laser clay pigeon shooting.
Laser clay?
Yeah, it's great fun, actually.
Oh. So you don't get the clay sort of disintegrating
in
the sky?
No, the clays are made of reflective plastic. The guns are real, but they've been packed full of electronics, and they basically fire a laser, which, if it connects with the target...
You see a bright spot.
It gets picked up by the gun, which sends a radio signal to the scoreboard.
Oh, a veritable hit.
A palpable hit.
Palpable hit.
It is slightly disconcerting when you drive into Wild and Waiheke, of course, to see a group of people lined up with shotguns. But they are entirely harmless. Bit of a plug for Wild and Waiheke there. It really is well worth going. Yeah. You know, and I do real clay pigeon shooting, and I find the laser stuff fun.
I thought the big part of clay pigeon shooting was the way the old clay pigeon disintegrates in the sky.
Yes. If you get that sort of puff of dust, you know, you hit it really well. It's a really enjoyable sport. Yeah. But, you know, obviously those of us who enjoy it realize that we have to sort this one out for ourselves, and there is no way you're ever going to get funding or have politicians... sorting you out with little sweeteners. Return for support.
Why don't you propose that the rifle range gets built into the reclaimed land at the marina? That'll work.
Yeah. Well, no, you couldn't, because that wasn't zoned for it. The thing is that down by the sports park and the golf club and so forth, it was originally planned that a rifle range was part of what could go on there. So why don't we start insisting? Because that will shut everybody up.
Well, I can tell the good listeners out there, because they can't see it, that Chris is perplexed. I think this is something that you and I... You and I both learnt this morning the history of the rifle range.
Well, there we go.
Yes.
So, there's still time to propose that in the consultation and for the local board plan. So, you know, we look forward to that. Yeah. And we better wrap things up. So, thank you both.
Well, my wrap
Alan Knight, Bernard Stone.
You know, regardless of what Alan says, I think the good old soccer players and the good old golfers do have something of a right to. What did you say? Chase a ball around a muddy paddock.
Yeah, fine, if that's what you like.
Mm. Bless them.
But pay for it yourself. Stop expecting others to fund your dull activities. Yeah. Certainly not to the tune of the kind of money we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what comes out in the wash. So thank you very much to our opinionated Islanders.
Month.
We'll
yeah,
be back
it.
The first Saturday of next month.
Waiheke Radio.
And we're going to take a look now at a new program called Kai Conscious Waiheke, which is a plan to save food wasted or reduce food wastage. And here to talk about it, Daughter Ray from the Waiheke Resources Trust. Good morning, Daughter.
Hello.
And Susan Barker from the Blackpool Residents Association. Good morning to you.
Hello.
So, Kai Conscious Waiheke, you've got the booklet here, a toolbox to help you save money, save food and save the planet. You know, people are pretty conscious about the cost of food. Surely they gobble up everything that they take home.
Yeah, well, you'd think so. It's definitely one of the main things we talk about in the kit is that research shows that actually we don't. So up to a third of what we buy gets wasted, which if you are on a budget, is actually a significant amount.
And is that because it goes off, or people change their mind and decide they want, you know, fish and chips instead? Or
yeah, so all of those things. So to get really technical and into it, so 19% is unavoidable. So that's like your banana skins and your tea bags, things that you're probably not going to be able to make anything else out of. But the rest of it is actually avoidable, which if we chose to act differently, we wouldn't have that waste. So yes, you know, leftovers going bad in the fridge, things like choosing to cut the crusts off your bread are also considered to be avoidable waste.
Okay, so we've got avoidable waste, and then, you know, stuff that goes off. You buy some stuff and it's not as good as it looks in the shop, and it goes the rest of it. But I mean, what impact is this having on households?
So on a household level, it can be costing you quite a bit of money, but it's also a loss of a resource, because on Waiheke we have the potential to have great gardens. We've got big sections. We could be turning that food waste into compost. So one of the toolbox looks at a whole bunch of things that people could do, and the final thing we look at is how you could be turning it into a resource for your garden.
Okay, so I suppose... as well as that impetus of, you know, saving a household money, what are the other things that you're trying to achieve through the program?
Okay, so yeah, there's social and environmental and economic effects of food waste, and they're quite large. Like if you take it on a worldwide scale, it becomes quite scary. So the amount of food that the world wastes is enough to feed sub-Saharan Africa. So that kind of social, we should be doing something about feeding the world, and instead we're throwing away our food. And environmentally, it's got some quite big impacts. We all are talking about climate change at the moment, and food waste produces food waste in landfill is particularly bad because it produces a gas called methane, which is a really, really harmful greenhouse gas. But when you are looking at the environmental effects, it's quite useful to think about what goes into getting our food to our tables. And if you are buying, you know, it's less if you're growing your food, for sure, but if you're buying your food from the supermarket, you can have a think about how much oil, how much water, how much land, how many people have been involved in getting that food to you. And it's quite significant. And then for us to then be throwing it into the rubbish is, not the best way to be doing it.
Okay. So let's bring you in, Susan. So from the Blackpool Residents Association, so there's a trial program, isn't there? Well, a pilot program of this Kai Conscious Waiheke. So tell us about your involvement in that.
Well, daughter came to a group of us and sort of got our involvement, and so it started off with a small group meeting down at the Blackpool Park, and there was a lot of brainstorming with Kate and around what Blackpool could do to sort of really ignite the community and bring it on board with food waste, or dealing with and reducing food waste. So the spin-off of that was the idea of sort of like a Blackpool social event every Friday, second Friday of the month. So there were all these kinds of spin-offs that came out of, in a way that's really galvanised the community. So, and sort of it's been this parallel process with the reduction of food waste. So it's been really amazing for Blackpool as a community, and like we've all getting to meet people we didn't know were there, and a lot of like-minded people. And I don't know, it's done something very special, I think.
And is there a crossover with the community garden?
Yes, there is. Like Sally and Graham, a lot of people probably know about them. They drive a lot of the community garden stuff. So, yeah, that's all kind of tying in. And it's, and I think also what's interesting at the moment is like the Auckland Council have stopped mowing the berms, so people really want to get into planting their berms. So the whole sort of, there's an explosion of kind of ideas.
Yeah, so we need to, as the requirement of the project in terms of, you know, the funders are Auckland Council, and they need us to get good coverage with the project. And we could have gone door to door and just offered it to households, but the idea that we could start to do some community building seemed like a smart thing to do, a smart way to do it. And yeah, it's been really, really interesting just how much energy there has been in Blackpool to do something together. And we did some, we've been working with Kate Lowe from Auckland Council as well, and she's been running some visioning workshops with the Blackpool residents. And food resilience came through really strongly about, you know, what the community, the ultimate Blackpool might look like as a food resilient Blackpool. And food waste is just a really good fit in that food resilience story, because the, you know, the other side of growing food is using it, and they are really well connected. So it's just been a really, really good crossover.
I think the thing that I've really found fascinating is that, like, you know, we buy our food and feel okay because we're composting a lot of the waste, but actually this has really brought up the issue of, well, actually, you know, we're composting unnecessarily to some degree because we're creating so much food that we don't really use, like leftovers, and thinking that's okay to put in the compost, but actually becoming more conscious about what we are wasting has been a very good thing.
Do you, daughter, do you think that people becoming more risk averse around food and throwing away food before they need to?
Yeah, interesting question. So I think it's, so we do talk about the difference between best before and used by, and I think there's quite a bit of confusion about those two things. And I know in the UK there's a lot of energy going into really starting to make people aware that a best before means actually you could use it well past a date and you don't need to be scared of it if it looks like that date's gone past. So yeah, I do think that we, you know, there's this thing about convenience, I think is a massive part in our modern society. So you don't, I doubt that food waste was an issue in my grandparents' time, you know, because they couldn't just run down to the supermarket and get whatever they wanted. They, you know, they probably used up what was there before they went and bought another one, you know, that kind of thing. So I think, yes, a little bit of risk aversion, but probably a greater story about it's kind of quite, you know, the food system's a bit broken and it's a bit easy to get what we want and food's really cheap when you, you know, look at it.
So, I mean, you talked about avoidable, you know, avoidable wastage, you know, throwing away, cutting the crusts off the bread and stuff like that. But, Susan, what are the steps that you've taken in your household to reduce, you know, what are the first steps you've taken to reduce food wastage?
Well, I think I've always been a person that doesn't like throwing out, you know, old food, really. I mean, we've always gone big on composting and worm farming, but I think now it's sort of like shopping sort of to a guideline of what our meals are, so kind of being very a lot more planful around what the meals will be and shopping in line with that. I think it's like this ongoing improvement. I think like our consciousness has been raised, so it takes a while to get in step with it. So, you know, that is mostly it. I mean, we at home in a way live kind of a vegan lifestyle, so in a way some of our, you know, our food consciousness has been there before, and we're just kind of, we're on the next step now.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that's really exciting about doing this project on Waiheke is that there's lots of really, really good stuff to build on.
Yeah.
And lots of people already are doing this stuff. It's just about making people talk about it a bit more and kind of maybe doing some community actions on it. So we're going to be running some composting workshops down in Blackpool. And, you know, there's the possibility that this will be a Waiheke-wide project and soon enough.
So, I mean, looking at the booklet, it seems like you've got those kind of three principles of, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle. So, you know, so that you talked, Susan, about kind of being more conscious about what you buy in the first place. Once it's in the house, daughter, what are some of the practical things that you're advising people to do to reduce waste?
Okay, so planning is the first thing we talk about, so that's what Susan was talking about, buying what you need and what you know you're going to use. And then once you've got it in the house, it's about storing it properly. So we talk about the big three, so the fridge, the freezer and the container. So things like using the freezer as a pause button. It's amazing what you can freeze. It's just incredible. We don't go into heaps of detail, but you know, any kind of Google search will, you can freeze eggs, you can freeze all sorts of things. And portioning is a big one as well. So that's just basically serving what you'll eat, and that I think is quite a tricky thing in households with children. So we do talk a bit about teaching children to learn to know how much they want to eat, and encouraging them to get a sense of that, so you're not piling up plates of food that then get thrown away. And finally, using leftovers. So it's a really good way to save money and save food, is to put your extra food into the fridge and then take it for lunch the next day. And you know, it's all really, in some ways it's really obvious, and it feels a little bit silly to be telling people stuff that they're probably already doing, but just putting it together, it can have a huge impact.
I just want to say, I think the interesting thing is, like, we often don't know what we don't know. Like, everyone thinks, oh, well, I compost, so it's okay. But actually, when you get down to the nitty-gritty and really analyse how much you are throwing out, I think that's kind of the shock.
So you've got the program, the pilot program running in Blackpool. For other people who are interested in finding out, you know, what they can do, what, how do they get a hold of the booklet and start thinking about
stuff?
Yeah,
so the booklet will be available on the WRT website. There's some information up there now, and we're just kind of shifting it. So I think we'll probably have a PDF version of the booklet that people can download. There's going to be a Kai Conscious Waiheke Facebook page, and I'm around to talk. Yeah.
Excellent. And you'll see the ads in the Golf News with contact details.
Yeah, that's right.
Great. Thank you very much. So we've been talking to Susan Barker from the Blackpool Residents Association, Daughter Ray from the Waiheke Resources Trust about Kai Conscious Waiheke.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
So one of the big events on the island calendar each year and a huge highlight, the Onitanga Beach Races, organised by Waiheke Rotary and raising money for other island charities and organisations. You'll know it if you've been on the island for any time at all, and if you haven't, then you're in for a treat come March the 2nd when you get on down there. And one of the big things in the races are the tractor races, and the person responsible for making that all happen is here with me now. So Charlie Walsh from Island Tractor Care. Is that right?
Island Tractor Works.
Island Tractor Works, yeah. So welcome along, Charlie. So tell us a little bit about the tractor races and kind of what people can expect on the day.
Well, the tractor races is sort of quite an organic event that sort of picked up its own momentum, and it's become one of the popular events. And the older the tractors, the better. They had some new tractors racing a few years ago, and while they made some pretty good times, they were pretty fast. Just for some reason, they just didn't hold, you know, everyone's fancy like the old tractors did. And some of these tractors racing were, yeah, pushing 60 years old, so they've been around for a wee while.
And I suppose that there's a bunch of them around the place because people are using tractors to launch boats and so on.
Not as much as there used to be. That's the biggest problem. In the early days, we used to have three heats, three runoffs, just to fit all the tractors in. You could get 15 tractors, 18 tractors sometimes. But now you can do everything in one heat, so we're really having a push to get old tractors. They can be restored old tractors, but, yeah, the old beach tractors, yeah, we really want them.
And is that because the people who can afford to have boats big enough to need a tractor buying a Sea Legs or buying a big fancy four-wheel drive instead?
Yeah, well, the Sea Legs, there's a huge population of Sea Legs on Waiheke Island. I believe they're one of the per capita. There's more Sea Legs here than anywhere else in the country. So it's good for Sea Legs, but it's pretty crap for tractor racing.
Yeah. And so, so people have got a tractor. I mean, a tractor generally, you know, geared pretty low for hauling lots of stuff around, not something you'd expect to have a lot of speed on it.
No, but guys will race anything. Yeah, I'm surprised no one's put lawn mowing racing down there or something like that, you know.
Yeah. So when you find your old tractor, what are you doing to it to get it ready to race?
Well, basically, you're just going to make sure that you won't kill anyone in the process, including yourself. You know, the steering's got to work, the brakes have got to work, nothing will fall off it while you're trundling down the beach, things like that. You know, I mean, it might be great entertainment, but at the same time, we sort of, don't want to have Osh sniffing around or anything like that. It's, basically, you want to try survive the end of the event. So if you haven't got brakes, don't worry about coming around. Yeah. Get your brakes sorted first, and then see you next year.
And are there people bringing the tractors into your shop and saying, I want something, I want to win? Or do you keep all those secrets?
I don't do any repairs as such. You know, I've said people, in the right direction, things like that. A lot of ingenuity to actually get machines racing is quite a hard case. You know, like they're supposed to be standard tractors, but, you know, you walk along the line and you go, ab gas, you know. And these are tractors that are 60 plus years old. You know, we're being pretty mean, or the governors are a bit dodgy, you know, and there might be a bit of string on it or a bit of wire for the day or things like that. But it's all in good fun. Yeah, but there was one tractor that went down with nitro, yeah.
And
had the NOS bottle, okay. He's turning on. That got up and boogied too.
Yeah,
that was a bit of humour.
And you'll be racing yourself?
I raced last year on a tractor with a blown head gasket that still got fourth place.
Yeah,
which is quite cool. But there's a guy who's bought that tractor and he's done it up now, so it's still racing. And hopefully young Thomas will bring it down.
Yeah, and you've got something else to go on?
No, I've sort of like just helped organising in the last few years, one way or another. I just got roped in. I didn't volunteer to organise.
No, so
just,
no one ever volunteers.
No, you walked too close to the spider's nest and suddenly you've been whipped inside.
Yeah. So how many tractors are you hoping to have lining up?
The more, the better. You know, like if we've got heaps of tractors, we'll just make more heats.
Yep.
Yeah. As it says, the people just really enjoy it. Just for some reason, the old beach tractors have just taken hold.
I suppose it's been a changing event, hasn't it? You know, with the sea legs coming in, and maybe, you know, the emphasis has changed. And but it's nice to have those more old fashioned elements to it.
Yeah, well, it's definitely humour. I mean, watching these old tractors trundle down the track and bouncing away and things like that. Yeah, it's definitely a laugh factor. It's not serious.
So, I mean, do you know the races have been around in various incarnations for a long, long time? And do you have any knowledge of whether, you know, the tractors have always been a part of it, or is that
first tractor race was in 1998?
Right.
And I was in it on a tractor that no one thought would win, including me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was no one more surprised when I just cut through everyone and got the finish line first.
Yeah.
Cliff Schaefer has a DVD which he made on Waiheke Island, and it actually has the first tractor race on that. It's quite a hard case. Unfortunately, so many of those old tractors now are now 2010 Doosans or Toyota Hiluxes, or it's going to be 2014 Great Walls.
Yep.
You know, they've all blown up or done whatever.
Yeah.
I've seen about half a dozen this year alone go over on the scrap trailer over to town.
So, I mean, I imagine a lot of them end up in the back of a paddock just rusting away.
Yeah, and then they eventually get picked up and scrapped. One or two people do them up, which is nice, but they are disappearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we might only have a couple more years of this to go.
I hope not. There's still people out there that don't want to spend megabucks for sea legs. They can, you know, they can get something on the water a lot cheaper with the tractor combination. And we can just hope that, yeah, someone actually gives it a bit of a, has a bit of a thing about it, and yeah, just comes up with something they can race.
Excellent. So what will your role be on the day?
Probably just normally just helping find tractors and getting as many beforehand, or helping people, you know, pointing people to go to register and things like that on the event, because sometimes people don't actually turn up until the day itself. Someone just rocks up on a tractor and goes, but I go sign up.
Yeah. Do you get to wave the starter's flag?
No, I will never wave the starter's flag. That belongs to Shorty, and it would just be wrong to have anyone else to do it. He is a racing icon.
Yep.
He's great. He's there every year. And in fact, it's people like him that make the races.
I thought actually that was one of the great shames of the scrapping of the parade, the Santa parade. You know, the Santa parade. I thought you're doing Shorty out of a job there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was the scariest clown who ever walked the earth, but it was an important job.
Yeah, dead right. Well, someone's got to scare the kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, and of course, with the paint, it makes it harder to identify them in a court of law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you very much, Charlie, for popping in.
Yeah, it was gold.
We look forward to that. I know it's one of the things I personally favour the tractor race over the sea legs. So,
yeah, a lot of people do, funnily enough. What I've tried to do to encourage people to come down and race tractors is we fund up a prize. So if you don't get a place in the races itself, you still have a chance of getting a draw and walking away with some cash.
Yeah.
And a guy last year came last and he still walked away with $50. We make it sort of like the equivalent of third place. And he was really stoked. He said he'd be back again next year. So your
business is sponsoring that race as well, is it?
Yeah, I'll up with a little bit of cash. Main Freight's actually kicking in this year, which is really, really good of them. You know, Bruce actually kicks in for a lot of things around the island one way or another.
Mm.
Yeah, good on him. Well done.
Yeah, well, good on him and good on you.
Yeah, but we really appreciate the people that don't get a place in the tractor races, and we just don't want them to be disheartened. So as I say, sense, if we can give them something for just entering and just, you know, winning a spot prize, that's great. Yeah, keep on coming down, because it's the guys that don't win any races but come down year after year to make up the numbers, to make it fun for everyone. Yeah, they're the people that we really appreciate, and I don't really think they get recognised enough.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good stuff, and we appreciate your role in putting it all together as well.
Yeah. So heaps of tractors. Don't be shy. Rock up, even on the day. Just come on down.
Yeah. And if people do want to register properly, you know, register early, what do they do?
I believe they can do it online. I'm not that computer savvy. Linda from the Vets in Ngāniroa is a big organiser there. You can see her and get your dog vaccinated at the same time. Kill two birds with one stone, saving petrol. It's got to be good for the environment.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Track racing, good for the environment.
Yep, dead right.
Yeah. Okay. So we've been talking to Charlie Walsh. He's organising the tractor race at the Onitanga Beach Races, March the 2nd.
That's the one.
Yep.
See you there.
Yeah.
Don't be shy.
No. All right.
Best fun you'll ever have with your clothes on.
Yeah. Well, you can always strip off and jump in for a dip as well.
Well, yeah. Yeah, we can make an event of that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much, Charlie.
Okay. Have a good one.
Yep, you too.
Yep.
You've been listening to the Interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirawa.